My name is Lockie Phillips, and I am a horse trainer, an instructor, a coach, an international clinician, and a horse dad. This is the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast, your pit stop in a troubled world to explore horse training that puts the horse first. You can expect controversy. You can expect opinions. You can expect facts. You can expect mistakes, and you can expect humanity here. This place is a place for our guests and for myself to share our experiences freely and openly, to help reach people just like you who have felt things or experienced things or thought things about horses that you might be afraid to speak of in other places. Here, we explore those things freely. This is your place to come home to horsemanship that just trains horses without emotional baggage. Today on the pod, our guest is Robin Vargaman. This podcast is going to be called Feels Like Robin because nobody feels quite like Robin. Robin is someone I've worked with, worked for a couple of years now, done a clinic with, and spent a lot of time getting to know, and it's been an absolute honor. So without further ado, here's Robin. I hope you love her too. I'm recording now with my dear friend and colleague, Robin Vargaman. How are you, Robin?
I'm excellent. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, Lockie.
It's so thrilling to have you on the podcast, and people from our community will be jumping up and down with glee to hear, a full almost 90 minutes of Robin. So Robin, please tell us, if you can, in your own words, who you are, what you do, and how you go about doing it.
It's funny because when you ask that question, you know, I've been asked that question lots of times, and it seems like it's always evolving, or my understanding of who I am is shifting. And it's something that I feel like I should have known since the time I was a small child, who
no,
I am.
No, well, that's an answer. You can say who I am is a shifter.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's a really beautiful invitation, because I think that in order for us to really be able to show up in the world how we want, we need to know who we are. In order to have good, healthy relationships, we need to have a really good, healthy relationship with who we believe we are. And for me, that's definitely been an evolution in shedding past concepts that I've picked up along the way to survive, or I thought I needed to be in order to survive. And so, yeah, so right now I am a steward for an 1,800-acre ranch in Taos, New Mexico, and we have a growing herd of 12 horses and around 18 donkeys and some goats and alpacas and chickens, and it's absolutely the place that I know I'm supposed to be. And that feels amazing that I've landed here in this community and I'm supposed to be here. But I'm eternally like searching for how to be a better steward of the land and this earth and my teachers. I've been so lucky to have so many amazing teachers on that journey, and horses are, they are just an integral part of my, they're my mentors in this connection between the land and how we are as humans in our domestic life. And so, I grew up on a reservation, Tohono O'odham Reservation in Sells, Arizona. And so my first interactions with horses and animals in the land was a very different kind of interaction. It was very much listening and waiting, and things were pretty quiet, but life was also, you know, getting water was a thing, a real thing, in the middle of the Arizona desert. And, so then as I had horses in my life from a very, very young age, and then they became this, like there's like, we could do hours and hours of that. And I don't think that's necessarily worth going into, but yeah, I became over time, a hunter jumper person. I got studied evolutionary ecology, and plant biology and entomology, did a lot of performance horse work. So like these different stories are kind of all integrated into who I am now, and circling back to that and trying to learn the lessons from the different stories, and not get rid of everything, but pull on the threads to what feels useful for going forward. So yeah, we're just trying to create a space here where we can share that journey. And so anyone that wants to listen, come on. Anyone that wants to share, come on. Yeah.
Your childhood with horses, when you have shared stories with me, with us, have always been like something out of a Disney playbook. But it wasn't inauthentic, and it wasn't a costume. It was actually your very, very authentic existence, actually growing up with horses by your side, in a very natural agrarian environment, and then transitioning from that, how easy it was, seemingly like drops in a bucket, for you to transition from that world and then very quickly find yourself in the Bay Area in California in the hunter-jumper world. And those two worlds couldn't be almost more diametrically opposed to each other in many ways. Of course, there were horses there, but horses draw a clean line through various human cultures. And you found yourself in that world, and you're continuing to evolve and continuing to change. And now a woman of the plains out in New Mexico taking on all of this land. It's really an amazing story, which leads me to my next question. How on earth do we know each other?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
You know, you were coming across my feed, so through social media, bless social media. Mm. Actually, like, you were doing some trimming stuff, and then there was these other little aspects of, and so I was really going down the barefoot, pulling the shoes off my performance horses and going deeper into barefoot. And I bought your barefoot course and I read that, and I just loved how you explained it and who you were. And so you kept showing up, and this is how I think the people in my life that are supposed to be part of my journey, you just showed up lots of different times, so I couldn't ignore what you were saying. But what I really, really connected to was that who you were presenting yourself to be, and who it felt like you were, and the interactions that we had when I started doing the homecoming classes, is that you were really congruent. And that is something that I've been seeking for myself. You know, how do I show up and be more congruent in this world with, there's my ideals, and there's even the way I teach and the way I want to present myself and how I want to be. And then there is all of the other stuff that I feel like I needed to be to survive, or I was conditioned to be in terms of training, in terms of, you know, how we acquire food, how much gas I use, like just how I show up in the world. And so what I've noticed with a lot of the different teachers I've been so blessed with is that oh, people, I'm not alone in that struggle. Like there, it's a big struggle for so many, even people that I really, really admire and have learned so much from, that it's difficult. It's really difficult to say who you are completely, authentically. And I felt like you were doing that really, really well. That was my, that was my draw. So I wanted to figure out how to do more of that.
Well, I'm bowing deeply to you for that compliment. Very humbly bowing deeply to you for that compliment. And it really means a lot to hear that from yourself, because ditto. That's right back at you. And I'd like to say that if I'm congruent sometimes, that it's some sort of personal success of mine. But really, Robin, I was left with no choice. I was left with no choice but to be absolutely myself, because everyone else was already taken and I sucked at being anybody else. Sucked at it. I can only be myself. That's all I've got. It's my only currency, warts and all. But what's really important to me is the integrity of the work that I bring to the horses and to the people, to a fault. And you've seen my clinic, and or at least one of my clinics, and where you've seen several of my courses, I think almost all of them at this stage. And we are in a mentorship situation since more than a year. You've asked and joined a container where people come to me for mentorship. And when your name came across the application list for that mentorship, I paused and I went, Robin could be teaching me. But you were asking me for assistance. And then in conversation further with you and in delivering some lessons for you, you were very clear to me exactly why. And you've continued to be very clear to me exactly why. And we can talk about that a little later. And so I made sure that it was the right place for you to be, because I'm not interested in patronizing anyone, and I'm not interested in bringing people into a mentoring container where my responsibility, my duty as a service provider, is to answer questions and generate thinking and to help with the development of somebody. That's my duty. If someone's paying me for mentorship, I feel like it's my professional duty to actually mentor and not kind of wring my hands or stand on the sidelines or be afraid to speak. But if someone's going to step into that place, that it's really the right place for them. And I made sure that was the right place for you, because someone of your experience, the breadth, depth of horse with a capital H that runs through your DNA, I think if I looked at your mitochondria, I would see little galloping horses. You know? And so it was not only a compliment, but it could have been, if I wasn't secure in myself, it could have been intimidating to attempt to be a mentor with you, not to you, with you. It could have been intimidating, but it's not been for me intimidating. It's actually been a really beautiful challenge and journey, and I continue to adore showing up and to assist. And you've very kindly invited me to New Mexico for a clinic. And that clinic, if I'm looking at the ticket sheet, who's showing up from our community, it's like it's turned into a lighthouse. you know, that there's a gathering, a gathering of people, quote unquote, like us. People I know and people I don't, but a gathering of people like us. So you're doing it. You know, you wanted to create a meeting place. You're doing it. So that's why I wanted to have you on the pod, because if we look at Robin's mitochondria, we see little horses there. I'm sure your cells mutually groom each other across the withers, you know? And so to talk about horses with you, I mean, I could sit here all day and talk about horses with you, and often we do. But thank you for that compliment of congruency. Now, you and I understand the word congruency, but there might be people for whom there exists a fog index on that phrase, on that term. In your words, how would you define congruency?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. How I want to show up when I and how I believe that I should be showing up is how I show up, even under stress or under judgment or under something that might be triggering, you know, something that is touching on part of me that still needs work, right? That it's, and for me, I hold a non-hierarchical view of all beings. So that when we're working with horses, I mean, that extends to the mitochondria, that extends to the bacteria in our pores, that extends to everything, right? That we're all here and we have a equal right to be here. And I do hold horses as sentient beings. There's no other way after having lived with them for and interacted with them. Like they have their own consciousness. They have their own deep feelings. And this is coming from an experience and a scientific perspective as well. As a scientist, which I still call myself, that to put a horse on an equal plane, and yet they are domesticated, and yet we have them in fences, and yet we decide when they can eat, and we decide what kind of medical care they need, and when they can live, and when they even up to
when they die.
Yeah. And so, you know, how do I hold that power over and be congruent with my views of them being equal to me? At least, you know.
Yeah. My understanding of congruence, and we could discuss it at length, but if I was to give a straight down the road answer, for me, what you do aligns with what you say, what you think, and what you feel. Don't say that we're horse first if it's really human first. Don't say that it's consensual and ethical if in fact it's not. Don't say these things, really do these things. And that does not mean it's easy. It's actually extremely hard and requires us to not take any of it for granted. Do one thing with a horse once, think about it three times. And maybe then we're getting close. Reflect on it at least three times as much as you're doing it, so that we can be really sure that we're looking for these last vestiges of abuse of power and rooting it out where they live. Nothing is more beautiful to me than meeting a horse person whom has given up the stick, given up the spur, given up force, and has found ways to earn the horse's cooperation, friendship, and trust anyway, sometimes even better than they did before. Nothing is more beautiful to me than that. And that that person got to that place because they weren't just on an autopilot. They were really seeking and looking for better information, better practices, and asking everyone to their left and everyone to their right, well, what do you do? Or what do you do? What do you think? What do you think? And really not sort of sitting on their laurels. Nothing's more beautiful to me than that. And that's why I think you're gorgeous, Robin. You know, I remember in a live lesson, online lesson, I can't remember exactly your verbiage, but you said something to me like, I said, what do you want to work on today, Robin? You said, well, Lockie, I'm concerned about my power and my skill and my experience being an internalized lever and an internalized sense of force, an internalized sort of magnet that earns cooperation that I didn't really deserve. I'm concerned about my horse abilities and sense and experience being so good that it actually overpowers horses that shouldn't be overpowered. I'm actually concerned about all that, and I need someone's eye on it. Something to that effect. Am I quoting you accurately?
Yeah, I think you put it probably a lot better than I said it.
But, would you like to explain that experience? Because that might be a slightly alien experience for a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, so I'm a knowledge seeker, and I really have tried to learn from excellent teachers, and I've been so blessed to learn from, you know, I want to get things right. I want to do better by the horse. I want to, you know, improve myself. And so I've gone through a number of different worlds trying to get a better understanding of how to be cooperative with the horse, how to do the thing better. And that has gone through hunter jumpers, that has gone through natural horsemanship, that has gone through, you know, French classical dressage. And I actually wouldn't call myself an expert in any of those, because you need a lifetime, several lifetimes to be an expert in any of them. And because I've been trying to integrate the lessons, you know, the experts I would see me as a dabbler or a beginner in a lot of those things. But I also do recognize that, like, I've learned how to have really good feel and really good timing in certain instances. And I know the horse is allowing me to do the things because the feel and the timing actually is coercive in ways.
Unrefusable because it's so good.
Yeah. And I know this because I practice it, you know, I can practice it with my students. You know, they will struggle with something that they're having to do with their horse, and I can show them, and immediately it happens. And there's an energy, there's a timing, and we're able to do the thing. And there was a period of time where I thought that's what gave me qualification to teach. And actually now I realize, like, it's so much more beautiful when I can see the student find it themselves in their own unique way without having necessarily that skill set. If you have a technique that is really hard for a horse to say no to, then how do you know if it's authentic, what the horse wanting to do?
Yes.
And that is what's interesting to me. Like, that's what I'm really curious about, is is what the horse and I want to do together, is it truly us wanting to do it together? Is it because it's like
unrefusable?
Yeah.
It's like being very, very persuasive and you don't even know it.
Yeah.
That's a really humbling realization. It's like the flip side to competency. A lot of people are hunting competency because they don't feel they have enough. But there's a flip side to that where you can be so competent that it works against you, that every horse you encounter can't refuse you. So you don't even know which way is up anymore. You don't even know where the limits are anymore because there are none. The horse will just say, okay, not because you're coercive with coercive intent, but because the allure of your competency is so followable for an animal whose biology is designed for getting along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there are those horses, those teachers that say, well,
oh,
those
bullshit.
Techniques
don't. Oh, yeah. Bullshit on it. They go, bullshit. Bullshit with your
yeah.
timing.
Yes.
Bullshit with your
yes.
feel. Try again. Horse girl, horse boy. Who was that horse
yeah.
for you?
Yeah. So, you know, there have been a number of different of these types of teachers. But one that you know and you've worked with regularly is Satori.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and he's one that really compelled me down a path of freedom-based learning. So that was when I started kind of working with Elsa Sinclair. And that opened up this whole other world. Like, well, so what if I just take away as much of my power over as I possibly can?
Uh-huh.
Right? What if I just work in a big field, you know,
what
without
then?
Tight fences where they can very easily run
Leave.
Away if they want? Yeah. Yeah. And so that was that, like the deepening of the relationship that happened from giving back Satori his power, you know, and I just basically said, okay, no tools, no, you know, your tools are your timing and but you can't actually restrain them with a halter. You can't actually
see,
push
you and
them
I
up
both
against
know
the fence.
That our timing can get so good that that can be coercive, right?
Yeah, there's a degree of manipulation in trying to get anybody to do anything that we want to do, you know? And so, and not that that's a terrible, horrible thing all the time. Like, I don't want to demonize that, right? But to know it, to understand it, okay, am I being manipulative here in a way that's not, in a way that's getting in the way of me hearing them? In a way that's getting in the way of them being able to be themselves, right?
Okay, so my next question then in drilling onto this with you, because I have a feeling there'll be people wondering at this juncture, what's wrong with competency? What's wrong with doing the thing? If the thing is thinging, what's wrong with that? In fact, we've been conditioned to say, and believe that when the thing is thinging with the horse, when you ask for the thing and you're getting the thing and the thing is good and the thing is thinging, when the thing is thinging, that that's everything going right and that's everything we should be looking for. What are we saying could be wrong with it? Let me add nuance to that because it's not always wrong. What might be wrong with that sometimes in some instances for some people, for some horses?
It's such a good question, and it's going to be so dependent, right? I'm going to take that easy out. Like, it's really, really dependent on the relationship and the horse and the, but if I am, I'm going to go back to where, if I really, really, truly honor my relationship with a horse to be a true relationship in a friendship, a true relationship in that we see each other as equal. If I want to try to learn how to be a better human and create relationships in which I'm not manipulating the other, I'm not thinking about extracting from them, right? It's actually
Exactly. Anytime Robin goes post-verbal, I say yes, because I know that you've departed the land of language and you've entered the land of feel, where we just go, and we go, that's it. Like, we're no longer in the land of language anymore. We're in the land of somatics and feel and like a felt sense of truth. And that taking that enormously rich, beautiful tapestry and like somehow cramming it into words feels so violent and ugly and hard to do. It's like, it's like, how do you solve a problem like Maria? How can you take a cloud and pin it down, right? How can you take nature and condense it into a word? But we must try, mustn't we? Because humans are so lingual. We're so word symbol heavy. It's the way we can reach people.
Yeah. And I think that's what is so beautiful about working with a nonverbal species.
Uh-huh.
Right. You know, and to your point, it's like, there's lots of things where we can say, clearly that looks like abuse. Clearly that looks like, that feels really, really wrong. Clearly, that looks like a repetition of enslavement,
yeah.
Right? It just of a different species, right? We can see that, but there's also the space for having a relationship with a nonverbal species that feels really reciprocal or feels non-extracted. Like there's this magic that happens there that I'm so drawn to, right? When I can feel the difference between when one of my horses says, okay, I'll do this thing for you because I like you and you've asked, and this is how I've been conditioned since the time I was, a year and a half to do these things, right? Right. Even though you're not using hardly any pressure, or I may even be free in the pasture, right? Versus like us discovering something together versus them showing me things that I didn't even think of in my human brain that could be possible, of them showing me their version of the world, right? And if it's always about what I can do with the horse, I don't get very much of that, right? I don't get to experience knowing my horses at that deeper level, right?
Okay.
Knowing who they are.
I've got some harder questions, might I?
Yes, please.
And when I ask these questions, honestly, they're not really my questions for you. I'm trying to think of this non-local aspect to this podcast. What might people out there be thinking and feeling if they have never met you before? You've experienced French classical dressage with some pretty prestigious trainers and coaches, almost the who's who. You've experienced natural horsemanship, again, often with the who's who of that world. You've experienced the hunter-jumper world, which I know the least about, which I'm assuming you are probably rubbing shoulders with all the people, all the things. So nobody can deny that your journey has been full of learning how to do stuff and training, which was human-centric, that said to the horse, here's an idea. You have no concept of this horse. You've got natural abilities and components mechanically, but here is how you might want to conceptualize putting all of those components together. For example, this movement, for example, that jump, for example, this behavior. Let's do all those things. And you embarked on that learning journey. You learned all this stuff. You've got chops, right? On your worst day, half asleep in your little finger, you could probably help a horse in an emergency with that toolkit, right? So you've got this big toolkit. For a lot of people I've met and I know, they're chasing a toolkit that they don't have for whatever reason. And there are many reasons why people don't have toolkits. They've been misunderstood by the industry, abused by teachers, lack of access to horses, period, lack of time, a lack of the luxury of having the time and money to actually practice stuff, you know? And so they're chasing a toolkit. Like if there was a windstorm and they needed to halter a horse who is up against it and there's a tornado on the horizon, you could go out there and halter a horse with your toolkit with disaster on the horizon. Some people cannot. They'd be lost in that space. So to then have so much of a toolkit that you go, what's next? Let me transcend the toolkit is an other luxury. It's an other privilege, which I know you're aware that it's a privilege. That's not what I'm saying. I know you're aware that that's a privilege and you work for it. But what about the people who don't have a toolkit and want to transcend a toolkit before they've got one? What about that? That is like a little sticky wicket that us as teachers have to contend with, because you and I, we would love to just go, let's transcend toolkits. Toolkits will happen naturally. They're there. You know, they'll happen, they'll develop, they'll grow. And when we need one, we'll go get one. But we want to transcend it. We want to feel into this other space where, you know, that doesn't happen and something else is happening. We want to go there. But what about the people who don't have the toolkit in order to transcend it? That's hard.
It is really hard. This is really hard. And it's such an important question, because I think more and more people are wanting to have what they feel like is a more authentic relationship with their horses. And, you know, like if it's a bike, we can practice over and over again and we can fall down and, you know, it feels okay. But when we're doing that with horses, it's another sentient being, right? And so if I want to hold them carefully as I flub around in my toolkit, you know, and get to where I can have some clarity with my tools, which I think horses really, really appreciate. And we've talked about this before, but lack of clarity can be, I think, much more difficult for a horse than good intentions, right? Like just, you know.
Say that again.
It's a lack of clarity can be more difficult for horses than good intentions. Right.
People with great intentions, but can't communicate that clearly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so developing tools is an important part of the aspect of learning how to work with anybody, you know, and have a relationship with anybody. And everybody's going to come through it with a different lens and different, you know, because they have different experiences and they themselves are different people. And so the tools that you need in order to communicate are going to really vary depending on the relationship and the two different individuals that are trying to have a relationship. But in my experience, when I recognize that I have power over with a particular tool, then I really, really need to be mindful and aware that I have that power over, and then I might not really know how I'm using that tool. And
I see what you're saying now. Let me try and bring, you tell Please. Me if I'm getting this right. You tell me if I'm getting this right. The beginner who's attempting to develop a toolkit, as they're attempting that toolkit, As teachers, we want to equip them with as much clarity as their horse requires as quickly as possible for the horse's well-being, right? Nothing's worse than seeing a beginner's horse sigh like their soul has left their body because someone has flubbed it again, you know? And that can be mentally really draining. So as teachers with a beginner, let's give you as much clarity with this tool as quickly as possible. And let's try and get as much of that clarity first before we even try with the horse. But once we've got that clarity and the toolkit is, let's say, developing but not gotten, you're getting it, you haven't gotten it yet. The beginner is uniquely placed to feel, sense, and enjoy a non-leveraged relationship more than the uber experienced, uber competent of us, because we have become so competent, so experienced that that now works against us. And we need to seek the beginner feel. We need to seek the beginner's mind, the beginner's hand, the beginner's lack of assumption, the beginner's lack of skill, because if you're making little mistakes, but you're still clear, there's no way you can leverage your tool over the horse. The horse is like, you are actually not that effective that you could overpower me. And in that space, a lot of horses go, oh, and thank God you're not actually that good that you could overpower me. So I'm really enjoying getting to know you in your imperfection. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying that as you're developing this toolkit with as much clarity as you can, it is simultaneously creating space for me to exist with you. But once that tool becomes really well established, really, really effective, the horse can very quickly and through a cover of darkness in the middle of the night, you wake up and now there's no space for the horse inside that technique. And you say, what happened? Who turned the lights off behind their eyes? Where did that go? And I think that's what a lot of experienced horse people get to. They're like, I can do all the things, but all the joy has been squeezed out of it. And so I really enjoy teaching beginners for that reason. I think the hardest for me, horse lover to work with, is the one who has just enough consolidated toolkit to be really dangerous with the horse, but not enough to be humble of it yet. That's the hardest one to work with. The one who has just had enough taste of competency with their toolkit, but not enough to know how much they're potentially overpowering their horse right now. That person, if you were to bring that to awareness, we need to be able to have communication skills akin to solving the Middle East. You need to be able to have diplomacy out the wazoo to help that person realize that you're very, very good, but the horse is not centered anymore. Yes, they are. Don't you know? Because they remember being a beginner. They remember struggling when the horse was centered as they were making mistakes. Now they're not making those mistakes anymore. The horse isn't centered. They're getting more compliance and then the horse just fades away and it slowly drips in a bucket and suddenly they find themselves sort of up shit creek. And I've often found that if you try and bring awareness to that for someone, there is no knowing how someone might respond to that. Some people respond with volatility, some break down, some have a break with reality, some actually lean in and go, oh my God, thank you for telling me. What do I do now? And I'm like, quick, let's be a little bit more shit about what we're doing. Quick, let's like intentionally make some mistakes. Let's wait too long. Let's like not use that tool. Let's pull back from this. Are you feeling, am I going in any the same direction as what you were thinking, Robin?
No, absolutely. I get so excited about this conversation because what if we as a human race in ourselves felt comfortable to say what we were feeling and know that that wasn't going to be taken as an offense and completely ruin the relationship that we have with others, right?
I feel very attacked right now, Robin. Way to call me out. But go on.
So what if we were able to practice this with our horses, right? Mm-hmm. So I can say, you know, I can say I would really like it. I really am interested in if you might be wanting to do this thing, And then I can also say, I really need this from you right now. I need this space. And us be able to have that conversation and not feel like we have to get defensive or be in an affront, you know, because we asked for something and we didn't get it because it didn't feel like it, the other was, didn't feel like they understood it or felt inclined because we hadn't earned that yet. And we can also say, this feels important for my safety. This feels really important to me right now. I really need you. And we have built enough relationship where the other says, yeah,
I get it. All right. We're taking a break now because we need to address what's going on in the world. And what's going on in the world is that we're all sliding feet first into a recession. And when we slide into a recession, many of us begin to struggle. Not everyone, many of us begin to struggle. And I'm blessed to have a business that is running well. And so because of that, I am able to do what I wish I could have done 10 years ago, and that is offer financial assistance to people who require it. I can't offer it to everybody, and it's on a sliding scale, and it's discretionary, but I'm able at this time to offer financial assistance for people who need it, specifically for my newest program coming out in September. In September of 2025, I'm launching Homecoming 3, where we're going to be exploring a subject called non-escalating pressure. That's very, very broadly, but we're going to be looking at pressure in all of its forms. We're going to be having really honest discussions about pressure from multiple different perspectives, including the perspectives of people who feel they reserve the right to intimidate a horse to get the performance result, for example, including people who feel like they can't put any pressure on any horse anywhere at any time. So we're going to be looking at pressure from a variety of perspectives, including riding and groundwork. I'm going to be equipping students there with strategies, techniques, and coaching to really start diversifying their skill set when they're communicating to their horse with pressure. Of course, we're going to have to define pressure, understand it properly, and make sure we're making really clear lines in the sand that always keep the horse first. If anyone here is interested in joining me on that, I'm offering financial aid for people who want to but are struggling to afford the entry price at this time. If you can afford full price, my advice to you is go for it. Afford the full price. Go for the full price because every full price entry, there is a percentage of that that goes towards the financial aid of somebody else. So when you show up in my community amongst dozens of people just like you, the people to your left and your right are either just like you or have been supported by others in the group to be there. I want everyone to know that that's exactly what we're doing at this time. Not so long ago, I dreamt of such an opportunity when I had no discretionary income to afford additional education, but I had the same motivation, the same dreams, the same hopes, and sometimes the same horses. I dreamt of an opportunity like this, and so it's my pleasure that as soon as I'm able to, I will give generously back to the community that's given me so much. So all you have to do is contact me at Lockie@emotionalhorsemanship.com, share with me your story, and I'll let you know what I can offer you at this time. It might not be enough, but it could help you access the community and keep us all together during these troubling times. If you're listening to this in the future, in years to come, well, I hope we're all in a better time in history then. And with that, let's return to my guest, Robin, who I can think of no one else who helps me take my mind off this troubled world, is someone like Robin and discussing our art together.
Right now, I really need you. And we have built enough relationship where the other says, yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
That when it's about safety and well-being, your safety and your well-being is important to me. Are you saying that in your experience, horses have the ability to develop the awareness outside of abusive handling, outside of violence, and the demand for it? Because a lot of trainers demand safety from horses before they've earned safety from horses. Let me say that again. A lot of horse people demand safety from horses before they've earned safety from horses. And so you're saying that in your experience, horses have the ability to be aware of your mortality, your sense of harm, your space, and actually caretake that when it counts.
Yes, absolutely. But you have to, you know, every horse is where they are in that journey. It can take some time to develop the care, right? So this isn't an advocacy for a horse that is dysregulated and hasn't developed care for you to not really, really develop clean boundaries with them. But in my experience, actually, it feels safer. I feel safer around my horses when they know me, they know my boundaries, they know my care, they care for me. I actually know they're not going to run into me. Right. I know that they're going to be careful of me. But that takes time to develop that relationship, just like it would with a human being. Right. You know, there's humans that you can be vulnerable with, and there's other ones that you can tell.
Can't.
Yeah.
And when you're developing that with a horse, they will make mistakes. And you will make mistakes. You're supposed to. And sometimes those mistakes involve maybe getting a little hurt here and there. There's not a single horse person alive who hasn't been hurt by a horse. And there's not a single horse alive that hasn't been hurt by a horse person. Directly or indirectly, it will just happen. I'm sorry, anyone out there who's wanting to do no harm and zero harm, I have to tell you, if you walk into the arena with a horse, when I say the arena, I mean be around horses, we will even unintentionally harm to varying or lesser degrees. You can do harm by inaction. You can do harm through lack of clarity. I mean, harm takes many forms. I found, though, that horses don't pathologize harm in the same way we do. They see it as information and learning, and they see it as part of loving the world. They love all aspects. I'll never forget a friend of mine who's deeply intuitive with horses. When Sani had cancer and I was angry, she said, "He's not angry. He loves all parts of himself, including his disease. He's about to take you on a journey to pure love with this disease to remind you what's worth losing. And he's got no qualms about taking you to that place. None at all. None at all." And so true. Part of the reason why I was drawn to him, this horse in particular, as my first horse, was because he was deemed as, quote, too strong by everyone who knew him. And all the people who knew him were very traditional horse people. Oh, he's too strong. I'm like, I love his strength because he will not let me get away with nothing. And he never does let me get away with anything that I haven't earned the right to. And when I was partnered with horses who weren't as strong, I was not trusting those horses because I did not trust that they had the strength to push back when they should.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I learned from the get the humility that horses can and will push back. And you should be aware of that at all times and be looking for the pushback, not looking for what you want. Look for the pushback and then understand that four-dimensionally and in a rich way, not in a flat way or in an asinine way. Really understand pushback. Sometimes they push back as an invitation to bring you closer. No, no, not like that. Come closer to me over here like this. Not rejecting you. I'm actually giving you an opportunity to do better.
I so resonate with this because it does feel like to me the way horses know each other, just watching their herd, is they push on each other.
Do better.
Right? Yeah. Asking you to do better. Asking you to show up more fully. Right? You're not being all of you. Let me feel more of you. Come on, where's more of you?
Ooh, that's a good one. Can we sit on that for just a little bit? Where is more of you? My horse Sereno does this to me. If I'm too down-regulated, he comes up and he's like, poke, 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 nip, 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 mouth, mouth, mouth. He's like, up, up, get up, get up. Why are you down? Get up, get up, get up. Stop it. I will not hold you up. You need to be up here with me. I'm a unicorn. Yeah. Be up here. And I'm like, oh. And he's like, more pressure with less force. I'm like, sorry, what? More pounds per square inch with less force. Your lightness is felt by me as force. Your lightness is felt by me as an individual as an attempt to convince me. I would rather you just take the mask off and say it, Lockie. That's what he's teaching me about. And it's blowing my mind, you know? Chew on this with me. I know you could go in many directions with that. Pick a direction and run with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm actually curious how that's showing up, like actual examples that's showing up.
He will literally grab my jacket. Grab my jacket. And then without hurting or pinching me, bite hard on the jacket. And then look me in the eye and sigh and go, come on. And then I go, and many, many experiments. It must be thousands of experiments of him doing this so far, because the monkeys take a while to learn, don't we? Compared to the horses.
We do.
We take, they need to repeat with us many times for us to understand. And so at this point, living with the horses and being around him all the time, and he will, there's a look that comes over his face when it's not it for him. He'll go, no, ask again. And even if I go to just touch him, if it's this coercive lightness, he'll go, no. He almost smacks my hand. He goes, nope, not like that. And I go, okay. And then I shed all of my timidity and I become tenacious and I go at him like a tenacious lion and I grab his neck and I go deep into the neck and I go scratch, 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 rub, rub, rub. And he purrs like a kitten. He goes just like that. Now, I think a lot of this is informed by his underlying diagnosis. He loves that deep pressure, right? And I think a lot of this is informed by his early life experiences with the heavy dressage he had in Spain from 2 to 6 when he was first sold. It was extremely heavy work. His body tells the score of that heavy work, that this heavy, tenacious pressure felt like home to him. So it's also the mere exposure effect. He's been exposed to that, so he prefers that. But I don't earn his trust if I don't start with where he's at.
Yeah, and absolutely.
He's learning lightness and softness, because the lightness and softness that my intention has, I don't use lightness with the intent to coerce, quite the opposite. But he's maybe been exposed to people who did. Maybe, could be wrong. But when I go with that deeper pressure, and it's almost like he says, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And I love it. And it's okay. You don't harm me. I will tell you when that harms me. Don't trust me. Trust me to tell you. And then he relaxes. And then once I've met him at that space, then he says, okay, now that I know that you're not timid, what were you saying? And I go, lightly, softly, a little bit at a time, my friend. And he goes, okay. And he does it perfectly, if he's able. If he's able, he'll give it perfect or not at all. You see? So very real examples. It's everything from how I lead him in to get his food to how we work on his canter transitions. It shows up in everything we do because he's extremely congruent across every aspect in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just thinking about like that, just being clear. Like it's a clear way to connect with him, right?
For him as an individual. But for another individual, they might experience that as railroading, right? Yeah. He's learning a new language.
Yeah. So this kind of pivots into the importance of getting to know each other as individuals, right? And I think that it's easier for those of us who get exposed to lots of different beings, lots of different horses, to see how they are unique in the, as an individual, and how, you know, we can adjust, and how different, you know, their preferences and where they are and where we can meet them are. You know, so like my horse Ziggy, sometimes to get to come in and get clear in the conversation, I need to be really, like you were saying with Serenia, like, hello, I'm here, this is what we're doing. But he's so like his nerves are almost always on fire a little bit. He, you know, he's had head shaking, and we went through an EPM bout, you know, a bunch of different, some pole trauma, a bunch of different things that, so any sort of pressure on the head or any sort of pressure on him, he doesn't like, but he needs me to come in with that kind of energy of like, I was gonna have pressure, and now I need to be very, very, very almost air gap kind of a communication. And with some of my other horses, that like that won't work at all. Like if I came in with that kind of pressure to a horse like Coco, she'd be like, I'm out of here. You know, you want to go for a fight? Okay. You know, she would like, so just getting to know the individuals. And so what I really, really like about your program and is you're giving people the space and the awareness and the ability to work on communication and getting to know the horses without exerting coercion through the tools. And it's clear, like there's a clarity for the user. And it's not, I think that like that clarity has been something that's been really made a lot of other systems very successful, like the Pirelli or whatever, you know, like there's a clarity and like we do this and then we do this and we do this, and that's really, really helpful for our human brains. Now, can our human brains have tools that aren't coercive so that we can get to know the individuals and the way that we can actually connect with them in real relationship rather than just getting just seeing them do the thing and giving the permission to make mistakes, you know, giving the permission to get no answers. That's huge. That's really beautiful.
Kind of wild to me that the revolution right now is often centered around getting no answers, asking questions and getting no answers. That's kind of the antidote at this time, because we're so accustomed to the horse answering, you know, and the trainers answering clearly with no room for doubt and saying, got to be confident, got to be clear. And that's true often, still true. I don't think it's as true always as it needs to be. I feel like often we need to live in a space of doubt working with a horse. Live in a space of, I'm not sure. Live in a space of, let's try and see what happens. Because if you're looking for confidence before you've tried, you know, anything at all, you're a non-starter. This conversation with you, for me, holds so much draw, so much hope, so much promise, because it just feels like, you know, when you can smell summer is on the way. Spring is great too. Don't get me wrong. When you can smell the transition from winter to spring, that's lovely too. But there's something saccharine about spring. But when summer is on the way and the wind blows warm, like a warm breath, and it's like the whole earth just sighs as all the trees take a great big exhale through their leaves. And it's like, it just feels like, ah, we're here now. And the promise of a summer of dry, warm, amiable weather. This is what this conversation kind of feels like to me. It feels like we're coming, we've left the winter behind. The horsemanship winter is long gone. We're in a horsemanship spring, but I feel like we need to go into this summer where it's like we can all kind of look forward to practice. We can look forward to doing things again with our horses. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I so feel this same kind of hope, while also like I know the rug is getting pulled out in so many different places, in the horsemanship world, in our country. You know, like there's going to be a big, there's a death that's happening. We're in this cycle of death, of a lot of concepts, a lot of ways of being, a lot of things that weren't congruent, a lot of things that are not sustainable. And it's going to be really unsettling for a lot of us, for probably most of us.
Well, as someone who's lived their life in a constant state of being unsettled, I have to tell you, I feel right at home at this moment in time because, as you said, you know, congruent in who you are and et cetera. Well, I wasn't given any choice because I was born and everyone was like, wow, I'm unsettled by you from birth. And so it's always been that way. And so it feels like now is the time, not for disruptors, but for the people who know how to navigate space where nothing is known for sure. We need to ask people like yourself who have lived in these liminal transitional spaces more than once and know how to go into it and out of it. And that these bold proclamations of one way or the other are important to get folks off the fence. But as soon as you get off the fence, it means you don't have the fence anymore. Maybe you leant on that fence, like the rug out from under your feet. People whom are worried about losing income because their clientele have evolved and what they're expecting training to look like and the kind of results that they are accustomed or have been trained to deliver and no longer the type of results that their clientele are looking for. And there are a lot of trainers who are really angry and confused about that. And it hits their bottom dollar. They've got mortgages too. They've got kids to feed. And that's a very valid consideration. I don't know what to do about it, frankly. Do you?
Well, I think the more we can help people feel what it feels like and that there's like support for the journey of back to ourselves, back to what your authentic being is supposed to be relating to this world, I think the more that we feel like we have to contort ourselves to survive, the more we're prolonging that pain, that agony. You know, this is something that the horses are so good at, is helping us find these places if we allow it, if we allow an authentic conversation with them. The more we can feel, because it's super scary. It's a huge leap of trust in order to let go of the things that you felt like were sustaining you. And, you know, I had to do that. And it's really scary. And everything in your body wants to hang on to or contort or try to massage the thing you're doing to make it fit. You know, I'm going to be in this world that doesn't feel right, but I'm going to just be, you know, a little softer, you know, a little gentler, but I'm still doing or contributing to things that don't feel congruent. And as long as you're in that space, we're missing out on you. Like the world needs you, right? We need your unique, authentic voice, which is going to be different from mine and is going to disagree with mine, right? To show up. And if we take that to our horsemanship, and I go to my horses and I say, I need you to be you, and I need to hear your authentic voice. It's a very, very different kind of relationship and what I feel like I can ask of them without them fully consenting to. Right? Because I want to know. I think their voice is important.
So a couple of things there. And we are talking about the same thing. This is the perspective I'd like to bring on it. A lot of people are stuck in a lot of suffering as they journey to look for themselves. Who am I? Am I this? Am I that? Am I this saddle pad? Am I that piece of equipment? Am I this technique? Am I that trainer? They are contorting. That is the contortion. The contortion is questioning who you are. The contortion is trying to decide who you are. The contortion is looking for who you are in everything except what's right in front of you. It's the Wizard of Oz, where after all of this, Glinda says, Dorothy, you dipshit, look down. They were on your feet the whole damn time. Click, 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 and you're home. Like, it's just the most humbling thing. As someone who has no choice but to be authentically themselves, I have to tell you, there is no mystery. There is no journey. It is not that difficult, and it's not that deep. It is painfully and excruciatingly crystal clear, painfully difficult to just be so simple in you. Just be you. Stop trying to contort. Stop trying to people please. Stop fawning. Stop trying to obfuscate. Stop trying to journey, 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 because that journey to the authentic voice is really a journey to the ego voice, because eventually it becomes about image, about identity, about optics, about the things you do rather than who you are. See, if you just anchor in who you are right now in this moment, then the things you do will come and go, and you won't be attached to them either way. You'll find it very, very easy to pick things up, use them lightly, and put them back down again. As I often say in our programs, I say, pick up the technique lightly, use it softly, and put it back down again. You don't have to form your entire personality around this technique. You don't have to. And if it doesn't work for you, stop it. How many times have I said on a group call, someone said, I'm trying the technique. And I'm like, how many times have you been trying it? Oh, 5 days this week. I'm like, stop. Stop it. If it's not working, stop doing it. Let's do something else. And they go, oh. And it's like, yeah, it's not my identity either. If someone said to me tomorrow and presented to me a paper that alluded to mare-foal bonding being coercive, I would go, oh. You know what I would do, Robin. I would write to all the mentorships. I'd do a public post. I'd do it out to my email list. And I'd say, by the way, guys, this technique I formed the foundation of my business on, I now have new information. Guess what? We're moving on. And for some people, that's whiplash, because they've attached to my identity through optics. They've attached to my identity through ego. But I'm not attached to that, even if they are. Right? So the journey to ourselves, in my opinion, is really not that difficult as people make it out to be. We're not that deep. Just be yourself right now. It's right here, right now. That's been my experience on this, because I want to encourage anyone to stop contorting. Stop it. Stop it. Just stop it. Just be yourself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems easy.
No, it seems easy. Sounds easy. It's very, very hard to be that direct. That is the most hard thing to do.
Yeah. It is. It is. But when you can practice it in containers that advocate it, are supportive, are non-judgmental, that really hold that space for everyone to be uniquely them and in uniquely their own place in their journey, and recognize like that is what connects us all, is the ability to connect and communicate and hear and see each other in spite, like, and celebrate our differences, right? Like, then the community can slowly grow, right? Because then it becomes safer and safer for more.
Do you remember the homework assignment I set for the advanced mentorship group around the Olympics last year? Do you remember?
Yes.
Okay. So there were 7 or 8 of us in a group, and I said to the ladies in the group who were hiring me for mentorship, so I was going to mentor, I said, right, the Olympics is here. We're all up in arms about it. I said, I'd like everyone to go find a video of a trainer they really don't like. I'd like you to watch it and then come back and list 3 things that you saw that were positive about it.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was. That is why I love you so much, because you're trying to help us be congruent, you know? So here I am. We need to be the bridge. We need to be able to bridge across.
Yeah, I was like, Robin,
things,
you want to be the
right?
bridge? Go bridge that. Go bridge that, Robin.
Right. Oh, you boy. Know, it's hard to bridge across what you see as abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But it came from somewhere, right? It came from the same places that we have all experienced. You know, it's coming from a place of survival and conditioning and frustration of not being able to be ourselves. So, you know, I do believe that there are, you know, I know there are absolutely beautiful people doing really
bad things,
hard things for their horses. Yeah.
If we categorize bad things as things horses really are struggling with, if we categorize it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they are conflated, you know, like we get conflated of who we need to be in order to be anything important in this world, in order to be seen in this world, in order to be, you know, and so we bring the horses along with us. And I've done this for a large part of my life, you know. Okay, probably, you know, I would like to sanitize my childhood, but even as a child, you know, oh wow, look, she can, you know, ride bareback and with, you know, and do these jumps, and she's only 5 years old, you know, right? Like there's a recognition that you're going to be fitting into the world when you're able to achieve these things. And the horses give us wings. They allow us to have this whole other, you know, they make us superhuman in some ways, right? And so what other better way to be seen than on the back of a horse, which we've been doing for a really long time, right? And impressing, you know, different cultures and impressing our, you know, making us more powerful. So how do I make reparations for that? How do I just recognize, like, and own and honor, like, I don't need that recognition. I don't need to have that, you know, power, or I'm going to be able to survive without that. So there's now space for to have an authentic relationship with the horse. There's space for myself to have an authentic relationship with myself, right? And I really do think that that horse manipulation and abuse is directly and intimately connected with how we see ourselves.
I've found that many horses would like us to be aware, but not many horses are asking for apologies or atonement. And that seeking atonement through our practices now is a pretty poor way to go about developing rapport with a horse, because all they sense is this deep conflict in you, and that feels like a barrier between you and them. And that if your reins feel like an apology and your leg feels like an excuse, and if your body feels like shame, they often will just turn and walk away. They don't want that. They would like you aware. They don't want you to go back inside the matrix now. You know, like, you're out. Great. You're aware. Thank you. Let's move forward. No apologies needed. Even reparations not needed. We can just go forwards with each other. And when I offered that homework assignment, it came from a very honest place inside me that also struggles to watch many things. I would love to turn on the FEI and watch, take some popcorn and sit there and have an evening watching my sport, right? I'd love to. I would really love to, but I can't. And so I'm not trying to get with them by looking for the positives. I'm not trying to. I'm not even trying to identify with them by looking for the positives. It's an exercise for me in non-judgment, but discernment. And even if I see an egregious amount of pressure being applied to a horse and the horse is in, not discomfort, distress, usually I can also see a horse who understands how to apply themselves to effort. And then I think about the clients I have who are not having horses in distress, but they also have horses who don't know how to apply themselves with effort. And I think, well, there's the thing that's salvageable there, is that the horse does know how to put forth an effort into the partnership. Into the partnership, the horse is putting effort into the partnership with the person and experiencing distress as a result. But what if we could put effort into the partnership without distress as a result? What if? I don't think the solution is like baby bathwater out the window. So that's really what it was all about. And when all of you guys were coming back with your commentary on, here's my video and here are my three things, and I could hear everyone's teeth grinding in the message, in the sentences. And I would point it out. I'd be like, no, do better. Let that go. Let that rage go. Do better. Look at them with respect. Because if we, in this container, in this mentorship, calling ourselves Advanced Emotional Horsemanship Mentorship, if we cannot approach discernment without judgment, who the fuck can? Hello, this is the time. No one else maybe will try. So why don't we really, really look at this? Really, really look at this. We have to. Especially if it's difficult, you know. I got really pent up about it, frankly. Maybe I was going through something. I don't know. And I don't even know if I'd repeat the experiment, because it did bring yourself and a couple of the others to a limit where you actually said, Lockie, that's enough. And I went, got it. I'm off. Immediately back off. I won't push you into distress for an experiment, right? But I think this is what it's going to take. Frankly.
Well, there's, I think you touched on something as you were talking about that. There's this rage, this courage to stand up for what feels authentic.
Right.
Right. And to be able to direct that and understand that it's really about, like, the rage is really about meaning to be able to have your voice heard and to say, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel safe for me. And this these beings that I love. But there's no place for shame. There's no place for judgment. There's no place for division in that. I can have that same amount of anger at myself for not listening to myself. Yes.
Right.
And it's truly a healthy, beautiful, protective aspect.
Rage.
Of, yes. Right. But it doesn't need to be now everyone who has ever raised a hand to a horse or has a video of them doing something that seems horrible that needs to be, you know, blacklisted forever. I don't think that's the answer. Right. We can't excommunicate our whole community.
I agree. And what I'm concerned about is the rage we direct at others is really rage we have for ourselves. Little sticky wickets we have about things we've done that we need to reckon with. And we can't reckon with that by making other people the punching bag for the things that we haven't come to terms with in ourselves. And so anytime that appears, I've got a little bit of a nose like a bloodhound for shame. Being a gay person, you're raised in shame everywhere. And so you become hyper aware of it. Frankly, I'll hold space for a little bit of judgment sometimes, so long as it's without shame. I'll judge someone, but I won't shame them. You know better. Nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you, but you know better. Don't do that again. That was wrong. But you're not wrong. What you did was wrong. You're not wrong. And there's nothing wrong with being wrong. You see, there's no shame in being wrong, you know, or doing wrong, you know. But everyone gets to decide where they live on that, because that is a spectrum we all have to kind of grapple with, I think. It's humbling watching you develop these aspects of yourself with your horses. It really is. It's really humbling. You know, and watching you start to excavate and uncover your toolkit, pick up these tools again, even with a tentative approach, and go, oh, I know this is a powerful skill. This is weighty. It could,
the ring of power.
Yeah, it could railroad this horse if I was really to run with it. And let me be so cautious with its application, even with your seat, even with your hand and your leg aids. You're like, I actually won't do that. I'll decide to not, even though I've got a solution, I won't, just to see what the horse will do if I don't hold them up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you for that, Lockie. And thank you so much for holding space for that exploration.
I will continue to hold space for that exploration and everyone else's until they say, Lockie, enough. And then I'm out. And then I'm gone. So with, well, a couple of minutes we have on the clock left, muck something out with me, Robin. Mm-hmm.
To honor the quiet spaces of just taking care of the horse's needs and your own needs before our big long to-do list of the things that we have to accomplish to make us legitimize us as horse people.
That is so hard.
Yeah. So in order for me to be able to have clients and, you know, do I make sure that my fencing is repaired, or I take a little bit of time for myself first, horse first, and taking care of ourselves first, so that we can have a sustainable way of giving back to the community.
Thank you, Robin. How do you understand the tide of change, or how are you contributing to it? Because we've had many changes as a community, but there's another one right now.
Which other one are you talking about exactly?
Well, we're undergoing a tide of change as a community. Things are turning over as a horse community. How do you define it? So what is it? And or how are you contributing to it?
Yeah, so I do see that people are willing, are really wanting to slow down, and it's not as interesting to have the ribbons or, you know, the many trophies or championships or whatever it is on their wall, that they want something more supple, something that feels less coercive. And I feel that's happening all over the place. There's people that are starting to now recognize what distress looks like in a horse. And that's, I think, on its way to being normalized, which is an amazing step forward for a horse, right? Amazing. And so how are we contributing here? Well, one, you know, my horses get to live as a herd, and the people that come into our space, there's just always an invitation to observe first before we decide what we're going to do for the day. You know, there's always an invitation to allow what our senses and our interactions with the horses in where they are on that day, on any given day, comes before my really, really strong desire to work on my seat. You know, because I know I need to get that better to help the horses, you know. Yeah. So and that we can be, there's so much beauty in being intensely curious about really, really subtle things, really, really quiet things. And that's actually where, like, so much of the magic is these things that might have gone unnoticed if I was hyper-focused on, you know, being able to really get that walk to trot transition as level and smooth and balanced as we wanted to. So yeah, that's the invitation. Take time every day, even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes, to find something to be intensely curious about with your horse. What shows up?
And that actually brings me to, or already did answer, that last question of what is home for you?
Yeah, home is getting to know the horses. Yeah, getting to know them better in ways that I haven't projected onto them.
Ah, thank you, Robin. That was lovely. I'm so looking forward to our time together this year at your home. And I'm going to try and be smart about it and publish this episode just before that time.
Awesome.
Yeah, that would be smart of me to do. But yeah, Thank you for joining me. And I guess I'll speak to you soon, later this week. Yes. We have a call, right?
Yes.
All right.
Oh, thank you so much, Lockie. This was such an honor and such a pleasure. And yeah, I can't wait to what unfolds for the rest of the year. Yeah.
What's next? Tell people where they can find you if they'd like to connect with you, Robin.
Yeah. So we're in Taos, New Mexico, at a ranch called Regenerative Ranch, and I'm Taos Equine Connection. And you can connect to me through my email. And we have a website that is up, but not really has a lot of information on it yet. So to be continued, to be developed. Yes, but probably through my email is the best way to reach me, or on social media. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, so those are good ways to reach me as well.
Thank you. You're very active on social media in a very beautiful way. You're one of those social media angels. In the world of social media trolls, you're an angel because you go out there and spread goodness to everybody almost indiscriminately. You know, it's very, very good. We need that. We need you. So if anyone wants to connect with you, in the show notes of this episode, I've listed all and sundry apparatus where everyone can find Robin. Robin, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Lockie.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for being here on the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I hope you enjoyed meeting my friend and colleague, Robin. Again, if you'd like to apply for financial aid to join Homecoming 3.0, the nuance of non-escalating pressure, just have to email me at lockie@emotionalhorsemanship.com. If you'd like to assist and enter with full price, you can find the link to that in the show notes of this episode. Also, a friendly reminder that I now offer payment plans to enter all of my online courses. You can slowly pay for an online course across 3 installments, and you will get to access the course from the moment you pay your first installment. So I hope this is making it a little bit easier for people at this time in history to continue getting the education and support they need, want, deserve, and are inspired by. Thanks for being here. Please consider subscribing to this podcast, sharing it with your friends, and be kind to your horses and to yourself. I'll see you next week. Bye.